Hello, and welcome to the Love Mia Vita podcast. I'm Jerry DiPiano, CEO of FemPharma. Thank you for joining me as we discuss all things women's health and wellness. Please note that this information is simply that. It's information to help you to think through your decisions. Please consult your medical practitioner to discuss your personal situation. Thank you. This is Jerry DiPiano, and you're listening to the Love Mia Vita podcast again, and possibly you're watching it as well. Today's guest is Claire Gill of the Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation, and she is a woman who is part of what we call WINNING, which is Women Inspiring Nonconformity. And that is the way that we want to roll here at FemPharma. And Claire, welcome to the Love Mia Vita podcast. Please share with our guests your background because you have such an interesting background.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it and love being here to talk to people about the importance of bone health. So my background is varied. I've spent half my career in nonprofit and half in for-profit businesses. And I actually have more of a public relations and communications background. That's how I started my career and policy. And I came to the nonprofit health field about 12 years ago and joined what was the National Osteoporosis Foundation. And then when I became CEO in 2020, we had a rebrand and are now the Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation, because all of the public told us that they love what we're doing, obviously, in osteoporosis and the importance of helping people diagnosed with this chronic disease, but also wanted us to focus on the work that we do to prevent it and bone health. So that's how Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation came to be. And then also I left briefly during my career at BHOF and founded the National Menopause Foundation because there was no patient advocacy organization for women at menopause at that time. So that organization still exists and we have a wonderful strategic partnership between the National Menopause Foundation and the Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation.
Well, how perfect, but you obviously don't sleep, right? I mean, this is a woman who clearly is one of these women who are inspiring nonconformity because she's shown us that you can do lots of different things and life has many different transitions, which is a great segue into bone health and osteoporosis. Because let's face it, as our bodies mature and age and change, women and men are more at risk for osteoporosis. And I think, Claire, I looked at some of the numbers and it's like over 50 million persons in the United States with osteoporosis. Over the age of 50, you have about one out of every two women that develops a bone fracture has the cause is osteoporosis. And for men, right, it's one out of four. So men are not men are part of this, but it obviously disproportionately affects women. And so we want to spend our time, because this is Love Mia Vita, which is sponsored by FemPharma, women's healthcare. We're spending time on women today and how osteoporosis and bone health impacts them. So first of all, for those that may not understand osteoporosis, what is it?
Osteoporosis actually means porous bone. And what many people don't know or recognize is that our bone is a living tissue that remodels itself throughout our lifespan. And one of my former trustees had also talked about osteoporosis as a pediatric disease that manifests as we age. And here's why. We build our strongest, densest bone from birth to about the age of 25. So once we hit, our early 20s, our full skeleton has developed and our bones are the strongest they're ever going to be. And the rest of our lives, our bones are breaking down, the cells within our bones are breaking down and building up, this remodeling process. So what happens when we age is a little bit of that remodeling, the breaking down and the building up slows a bit. Right? For people with osteoporosis, they're either producing too little bone or breaking down too much bone or both. And so that's what leads to the disease. So we can kind of think of our bone, our skeleton, as a bank, right? And we withdraw from that bank all the time. And what we're putting into the bank is good nutrition, which is good for all of us across our lives. But good nutrition and exercise helps add currency into our bone bank. And so again, if you're not adding currency and you start taking, the natural life process takes stuff out of the bank, then you have a deficiency and you end up with the disease. So that's why it really means we need to look at across the lifespan when it comes to bone health. And osteoporosis again develops more as we age because of, for women, two things. One, the aging process, but also the fact that if we're healthy enough, we reach menopause. And estrogen has an incredibly important role in women's health. And one of the things it does is protect our bones and keep that process, that modeling process happening. And so women lose up to 20% of their bone density in the first 5 to 6 years postmenopausal. And
Wow.
that's why people think it's a more of a woman's disease than a man's disease. It's only because men don't have that dramatic drop in bone density the way women do. So it happens a little less for them, and it happens at a later age for them than it does for women.
I want to see something that you mentioned earlier, which is talking about how things develop through the ages, and specifically when we talk about young people and ch children and young adults, and we'll, again, focusing on girls now, young girls and women. So diet is super important. So if you are a parent of a young girl, what are the things that you ought to be thinking about in terms of diet and in terms of exercise? And then we can talk about puberty and some of what happens in puberty and then 20s, 30s, et cetera.
It's the same thing that we need to do for our overall health, right? We need a diet that's rich in vegetables, fruits, lean proteins, and healthy fats, right? What we do or what we need to do for our bone health is the same that we need to do for our cardiovascular health, for our brain health, for our overall health. For bone, calcium and vitamin D are the nutrients that play a greater role. And what is concerning as we're looking at young people, particularly these generations, recent generations, is they're not consuming calcium and milk and dairy the way many of us did in our youth. And so many young people today are not even reaching peak bone mass. So if they're not reaching their strongest, densest bone, then they're already starting with a deficiency. And then again, the natural process of life happens. And so we're going to see more and more people developing this bone disease later in life because they haven't been able to do that. So as parents and grandparents, what we can do is make sure that our children are consuming that healthy diet. And we should be able to get the calcium that we need from our healthy diet, right? There's a lot of things, even fortified orange juice these days, right? You may see it has calcium and vitamin D. So that's terrific. That's how you can get it. Vitamin D is harder to get because of where we are in the equator, right? Those south of the equator are exposed to more natural sunlight. But even people in Florida, obviously, anywhere sunny, have exposure to more sunlight and are able to make their own vitamin D. But we also have the idea that now we really need to protect everybody from skin cancer. So we wear sunblock. So sunblock prevents us from absorbing vitamin D. So there's one thing you should really be thinking about is making sure that you're fortifying some of your foods with vitamin D. And if you happen to be one of those people who love like sardines in the can, those kinds of things have a lot of good natural vitamin D. The rest of us are probably going to get it from a supplement. But when you're young, again, you should be able to get enough calcium and vitamin D from your thing. Exercise, the movement aspect of it, is weight-bearing exercise. And that's something that naturally children love to do, right? Skipping, running, playing, jump rope, all of those things. But again, as we've become more of a sedentary society with children playing video games and they're not out running around, they too are not building bone because impact is what helps build bone. So you need to be on your feet and moving. Walking is great, but running, jumping, all of those things when children are young, letting them have that active play is so important.
Yeah, it just makes sense. It also brings up the question of the way in which society has made young women and girls feel that they are dying to be thin. And so we could talk for a moment about girls who are, restricting their diets, possibly developing disordered eating, body dysmorphic disorder, which is, they don't really see themselves as they are. They could be 100 pounds, 5 feet, 8 inches tall, but they see themselves as overweight and obese because they have a little bit more body fat on their hips or on their bellies or in their breasts. And, society conditions us, let's face it, to look emaciated. I was watching a movie that is now playing, and the main character looks like she is dying. She probably weighs 90 pounds and she's 5 feet, 6 inches tall. She's emaciated, but she's thought to be gorgeous. And she is, but not probably her bone health is suffering from that. So, I mean, that's one example that I think
Absolutely.
impacts bone health, right? Disordered
Yes,
eating.
the eating disorders, and again, even athletes, women athletes, there's something called a female athlete triad. When we are training so hard that our menstrual cycle stops, that also depletes bone. But it is something that happens to many women, female athletes, is that again, they go through a period where they're not menstruating because they're training so hard. And that menstruation, again, it's all hormonal and estrogen, et cetera. When that process is disturbed, that does impact our bones. So yeah, you're right. We have so many things to fix or to regulate when it comes to young women and how they see their bodies. But a lot of the messaging today, which I'm encouraged about, is turning to being strong or, being healthy versus being skinny. While skinny is still the mantra in so many things, I think there has been a significant and concentrated effort to try to change that dialogue and focus on being strong. And if you think about being strong, well, you need your skeleton and your bones to do that. And so hopefully, again, we can teach young women that to live the ha healthy, active lives we all want to have, especially when we're older, that we really do need to take care of our bone health. But you're right. We need to let young people know that it isn't healthy for them to be depleting their body of the nutrients that they have. And we also just we talk a lot about the uncontrollable risk factors of osteoporosis. And I think that's what scares people the most. People who said, "Oh, I've done all the right nutrition balance. I've been a healthy weight my whole life. I've exercised my whole life. Why do I have this disease? How did I develop this disease?" Well, it's hereditary. So something to really pay attention to is if anybody in your family, grandparents, men or women, on both sides of the family, right, paternal or maternal, have had anyone who's broken a bone. Maybe they didn't even get diagnosed because there's an 80% care gap. So people aren't getting diagnosed. But if you know that your grandparent or an aunt or uncle or your parents broke a bone over the age of 50 from a fall, that means they had osteoporosis. And so your risk is now higher to develop the disease as well. People with small frames, just again, why it's more focused on women than men. Right. For those of you who can see us as well as listen to us, I happen to be built like a football player with, across my shoulders, right? You look at genes, it's a completely different frame. Well, so there's nothing we can do to change that, right? You're built with the frame you have. The importance is making your frame as dense and strong as you can, no matter what its size. But obviously, there's less room for your bone mass than there is for my bone mass. But having said that, I have a large frame. But we also need to address people being overweight is not healthy for your bones as either, right? Because the quality of the bone isn't good. So you might have a large frame. If you have a large frame and you're very strong and you're a normal weight for your size, no matter what your height, your frame is, great. That's fine. But again, it's those extremes of being too thin for your frame, even if you're tiny, and being too big, even if you have a large frame. None of those is good for us.
And I also understand, because we've done research in endometriosis and conditions where the goal is to suppress the estrogen production. And these are young women in the reproductive age group cohort. So if you're a young woman with endometriosis and you've been prescribed something that makes you become amenorrheic, which is you stop having your menstrual cycle, you probably want to ask your endocrinologist, either an endocrinologist or reproductive endocrinologist, to address this before it becomes a serious issue, because endometriosis is not curable, but for potentially having a total hysterectomy, which then means that you're in full-blown menopause. So the goal is not necessarily to thrust young women into full-blown menopause, but it also means that you have a risk factor for the development of bone, you're losing bone mass, and you probably are also at risk for developing osteoporosis.
That's absolutely true. And in all of this, I think this also raises a topic that you and I like to talk about a lot as far as women's health research,
yes, right?
What's available to women to treat conditions, specifically women that specifically, conditions or diseases that impact women more than men or solely women, are so underfunded. And there are so many questions to be answered that a lot of it is we don't know. So what we're left with is exactly as you said, you have endometriosis, you have to fight that condition and to treat that condition. The option is to suppress your menstrual cycle, which again, will have all kinds of other issues, including bone. And that's something that we're just supposed to deal with, right? So same thing for breast cancer treatments. Thank goodness we now have treatments for breast cancer, and that is so important. But many of those treatments also deplete the calcium in your bones, which means if you survive your breast cancer, you will end up with osteoporosis. So the important thing is to save the life, obviously. But again, the woman will end up having to deal with a chronic disease and potential fractures. So wouldn't it be wonderful if there were research and dollars and responsiveness to how to treat women's diseases that didn't bring on another condition as an outcome of treating that disease? And that those studies are just not being done. They're not being done.
No, they're not. And I feel like we're playing a little bit of whack-a-mole but as you said, it could be that you're treating breast cancer. It could be that you're treating an autoimmune disease. It could be that you're treating endometriosis. If you're treating an autoimmune disease, we know the first line of therapy is often some of the steroids. Steroids wreak havoc on your life. Crazy, you know, they make us nuts. You know, we turn into different humans. But then they impact your bones, and methotrexate, which was originally developed for cancer, is one of the first lines of therapy, which also wreaks havoc on your liver. So don't get me started. So yes, you're treating one condition, but it has other consequences. And it's not to say that you don't want to treat those conditions, but
absolutely,
just don't know. So we're left with experimentation. Right? Titrate this, titrate that, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. If that doesn't work, then we'll add back this. And you hear a lot about add back therapy, particularly talk about women's health conditions, for the very reason that we are describing what goes on in one very important condition, which is osteoporosis. And people think, if I have a bone fracture, just get it fixed. But osteoporosis is serious.
It's serious and it's deadly. So, we walk that fine line between being supportive and providing real hope and support for people who have this condition. And it is, the good news, a very manageable condition, right? We do have therapies for osteoporosis that are more effective at preventing fractures than statins are at preventing heart attacks. The problem is too many people don't take them because they worry about random side effects they've heard about, which Our ha that happened. Every possible treatment has a side effect, unfortunately. But they tend to be very rare. And so you have to look at your risk of fracture versus the risk of a very rare side effect when it comes to anything. So, right. So it's manageable, it's treatable. And what we do, though, need people to pay attention to is the flip side of it is often deadly. So you talked about, again, the fact that 54 million people are impacted by osteoporosis. That's osteoporosis and low bone density. So about 10 million Americans have full-blown osteoporosis, but 44 million have low bone density, which is often called osteopenia. And that means you're at greater risk for developing the disease, right? So we want the people with osteopenia to start recognizing that they're at risk and making sure they're getting calcium and vitamin D in their diet, that they're doing the weight-bearing exercise, and that they're avoiding things that could cause fractures, right? So that's one thing. And then the people with osteoporosis, again, making sure that if they need a treatment, that they have access to that treatment. And there are several varieties of treatments available, but what is right for you and what's right for me might be very different. So we need to really ensure that that decision making about what treatment you get that's right for you and what I get that's right for me is left in the hands of individuals and their healthcare providers, right? And not insurance companies deciding that you and I have to take the same medication, even though I might fail on it before I can get to the medication that actually works for me. That shouldn't be how our system works. And so there's a lot of things that we need to do to sort of make sure that women, first of all, know the importance of their bone health and that they get diagnosed for the condition if they have it, particularly if they're at high risk of fracture. And then they have a clinical expert who's there to help them make those treatment decisions and that their insurance is going to pay for it, right? That's the sequence of things we want to make sure happens.
And it is coordination of care, because let's face it, if you are seeing an oncologist and you are getting treatment for breast cancer, let us say, and you haven't seen your endocrinologist, or maybe you are seeing an endocrinologist, it would be great if your endocrinologist and your oncologist communicate with one another. And trying to forge that coordination is so important, because they may have a better, I use the word cocktail. Another no-no, because alcohol does exacerbate the problem. But if you'll forgive me for a moment, the cocktail of prescribed treatment options, or even if they're not pharmacological treatment options, if you've just had your breasts removed, maybe you shouldn't be lifting weights the month or the weeks after you've had your surgery. Maybe you have lymphedema. So it's really important to coordinate that care. And unfortunately, we are at a place where there is a lot of uncertainty about how that's going to happen, particularly if we think about what may change in the environment for insurance coverage. I know a number of people who are listening may be on private insurance. They may have, an insurance plan that is very thorough and very fulsome. But if you're on Medicare or Medicaid, we don't know what may happen there. Ditto on the Affordable Care, which some folks refer to as Obamacare. So there's a lot of uncertainty, but it's important right now, if you're listening to this podcast, right now, try to figure that out before further changes are implemented. Have a plan. Make sure that you have a plan. And I mean, not just an insurance plan, but how you're going to navigate the osteoporosis or other health conditions that may be impacting your bone health. So we talk we've kind of talked about some stages and ages. One of the things that was curious to me, it was during pregnancy and lactation, that there's also the possibility that women will have greater risk. And that surprised me, but I guess it shouldn't, because of the hormonal shifts.
Yes, that too is very rare, right? So I don't want to, worry or over burden women who are going through their pregnancy and you know, breastfeeding kind of stuff. There is lactation induced osteoporosis. The good news is there are experts out there who can help women who are, you know, are dealing with that particular issue. But exactly as you said, you know, there's so many things happening in a woman's body with the fluctuation of hormones, particularly estrogen, what we're talking about, and even the role of the ovary in the woman's body. I've learned so much in my work with experts in the National Menopause Foundation about just how important the ovary is to overall women's health, and that there's really a discussion among the scientific community to stop referring to it as a reproductive organ, because that's only one of its many functions. And that really, when we lose the use of our ovary at menopause, it's like losing a major organ in the female body. And so they're trying to study that, right? What does that actual impact mean? How does that, you know, depletion of the ovary, the sensation of our reproductive years, impact our chance of developing other diseases? I mean, right now we know our risk of breast cancer goes up, of heart disease goes up, and of osteoporosis goes up at menopause. What are those other conditions that are also impacted? You know, and obviously there's a lot of study about brain health and menopause as well. And so there's a lot to consider. But again, I think it's really important for younger people and for those no matter what age you are, I should say, that it's never too early or too late to start taking care of your bone health, right? Like I said, it is a living organism. It's living tissue. So you can do the exercises you need to do. Even if you've lost some bone density, you want to preserve the bone density that's left, right? And those good habits will help you preserve what you have. And for those younger folks, as I said, you have until your mid-20s, maybe pushing on 30, to build into that bone bank, right? So you want to make sure that you're doing that as well. And again, it's not just for our bone health, right? If we do these things, it will improve our overall health. And so it's just investing in ourselves. I think that's one of the things we don't think about as women so much. We're so busy taking care of everyone else that sometimes we let our own health fall down the list of priorities. So please, I encourage all women to prioritize your own health and your bone health, because it does matter. And we need it to make sure that we can do all the great things we want to do for all the people that we take care of.
Well, it's part of the winning, right? So you're investing in yourself, you win.
And that is
a message. You have to invest in yourself. One of the things that we talk about is what are the diagnostic tests that women should be undertaking? Because let's face it, okay, you've already explained that we need to look at our background and history, a little bit about our genealogy, and our genetic predisposition to the development of osteoporosis, both on the maternal side and the paternal side, right? Are there risk factors? Were there fractures? Were there post 50 fractures in either our parents or grandparents? We also look at our, you know, how were we raised? Did we have a diet that was rich in calcium? Did we play outside? Were we nerdy like Jerry DiPiano, who liked to sit behind a microscope when she was 10 and look at amoeba and paramecium? Or were we out there jumping rope? Those are the kinds of things that we want to pay attention to. And then in addition to that, there are some diagnostic tests that are important for us to pay attention to. And to if our doctors, if our healthcare practitioner has not recommended them, what are those tests?
So the primary and the gold standard for diagnosing osteoporosis is called a bone density test, or a DEXA. It stands for dual absorption radiometry. Like, it's a big, you know, long name, but it's DEXA is what it's called, or just plain bone density test. If you are on Medicare, for those of you in that population, you can get a bone density test for free. It's part of the Welcome to Medicare package. And it's also something that you can continue to get, again, as you said, hopefully if everything continues that will continue as well. And the reason for that is current medical guidelines say that women 65 and older need a bone density test, as screening, right? Should begin at 65. And for men, it's 70 and older. But as we've been talking about repeatedly in this podcast, there are so many other conditions and reasons and risk factors that a woman might want to get a bone density earlier. So if you have those risk factors, if you know that someone in your family had osteoporosis, if you or someone in your family fell and broke a bone over the age of 50, anything except your fingers, your toes, and your head are considered osteoporotic fractures, right? If your fingers, your toes, and your head, those are not osteoporosis related, but the rest of the body is. So if that is the case, then you should get a bone density test. If you, as we've talked about, have had breast cancer and survived breast cancer, you should get a bone density test and see where it is. If you were a young athlete or you had an eating disorder or any of those other things that we talked about as you were growing up, you too should get a bone density test. It is super simple. You don't even take off your clothes. You lie down on a table and the machine just scans over your body. And then a radiologist reads and a bone densitometrist will tell you what your, they call it a T score. And the T score is comparing your bone density to that of a healthy 30-year-old. That's what it means. If you have zero and above and plus, then you're great. If you have negative, you know, anything below negative to negative 2.4, then you have low bone density. And we categorize osteoporosis as people with negative 2.5 or greater on their T score. We have tons of great information on the Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation website that'll help you figure out all of these things and give you more information. But those are the highlights. It's really much like I say, we get mammograms, or at least most women do, thankfully. Good. Some of us even get colonoscopies because we have a family history of cancer. And yet, none of us are getting a bone density test. And it's the least invasive procedure we could possibly have.
And it's so important. You know, I heard the story from a close friend whose parent wasn't that old. They were in their 70s, and the parent fell and fractured her hip. And she was otherwise, you know, relatively healthy, but she slipped on the ice, she fell, she fractured her hip, and she ended up in a rehab facility. The problem with that is she then developed pneumonia because she was incapable of doing anything. Mm-hmm. And then when she recovered from that and went home, it's still taking weeks for her to get to the point where she is capable to function in her independent living facility. So she's very fortunate that she has made it this far, but we underestimate the seriousness of a fracture, you know, whether it's fracturing your coccyx bone or you shatter your femur. Mm-hmm. You know, from firsthand experience, my mom, who was 89 years old, tripped and fell over the carpet in her apartment and shattered her femur and mm-hmm. had to have a steel rod inserted mm-hmm. into her femur. Now, at 89 years old, doing that sort of surgery is really,
it's awful.
Good news was she made it through, and man, she was as feisty as can be, just the way she was in the past, and you know, kept moving. But she was one of the lucky ones.
So exactly as you said, when we talk about it being deadly, it is that downward spiral happens. So the statistics are shocking, but there's about 300,000 hip fractures in the United States every year, and most of those are women. And of those, 25% will be dead within a year of that hip fracture. That's really frightening. And I, like you, I had the same thing. My mother broke her hip though, but she was 83, broke her hip. And my sister, brother, and I found that statistics coincidentally on the BHOF website before I was working there. And we said, this can't possibly be the way mom dies. Like, she's so with it and together and active and all of these things. And yet that's what happens. So 25% die within the first year, 50% end up using an ambulatory device for the rest of their lives. So that's like my mother, who then always had to use a cane or a walking device after that. And the other 25% don't go home. They end up in a nursing home or an assisted living facility. And so I think, again, we don't prioritize, oh, I might fall and fracture, you know, and I've said this, we're not losing our hair. We're not losing our breast. We're not losing our minds. The fact that we might fall and fracture goes down the list of things I'm going to worry about today until that debilitating fracture happens. And to know that we could have taken steps like making sure that the rugs in the house are totally, you know, matted down and set of, you know, not wearing spiked heels like we do anymore. You know, the stiletto years might be behind us. All of those kinds of things are so important because a debilitating fracture changes your whole outlook on life, right? You can't do the things you want to do. And so we just want to prevent that. We want everybody to be aware of it and to prioritize it so we can continue to live the healthy, energetic, independent lives we all want.
And, you know, we've talked about a lot of negative topics and there, you know, obviously there is, you know, nothing pretty about fracturing any kind of bone, whether it's your nose or your, you know, jawbone or what have you. But we just talked about some of the implications when you have a fracture, one of your limbs, as you know, we know you need your pedals to keep moving, right? Your feet, your legs, your arms, right? These are our pedals, right? But there is good news. So A, you can get the DEXA, which That's is right. a way to, you know, understand what your status is. And then there are at least two or three other things that we can do to take control of our bone health right now, right now, whether you are 25 listening to this and viewing this, or whether you are 65 or older.
Or 85. Yes. 85. Like I said, never too early or too late to focus on your bone health. And as we said, those keys are things that are good for all health. No smoking, really. If you're smoking, stop. In addition to all the other things, it's also bad for your bones. Consuming too much alcohol. In this one, it's a little less cause for concern, I think, because the studies that show it's basically, you know, you need to be consuming less than 2 to 3 alcoholic drinks a day. And I sort of say, if you're consuming more than 2 to 3 alcohol beverages a day, you really have another issue to deal with, and it's not osteoporosis.
Yeah, you might be taking it for the rug because you have too much to drink.
So too much, right? Keep it down, you know, on that. And then, like I said, living an active lifestyle, just make sure you're moving every day, right? That you're getting that impact exercise, whether you're walking around the house, taking the stairs, you know, anything you can do. The one thing that you mentioned, Jerry, that I forgot to say was the lifting weights, right? We're conditioned as women not to be muscular, right? And we worry about this, but it is so, so important that women do flexibility exercises and that we build the muscle that supports our bones. So you're not going to turn into a bodybuilder. You just need to talk with your healthcare provider about what's right for you. But lifting weights at every age is so good for women's health and for protecting our bones.
So we talk a lot about longevity. This is part of that, you know, the longevity that is a function of doing some of the things that we just described and discussed. Your skeletal structure is super important, irrespective of what else you may have going on in your body. You really want to keep that skeletal structure nice and strong. There are things that you can do. And the CEO of the Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation, Clara Gill, you're a rock star for doing this. Thank you so much for being part of the Love Me Avita podcast and for also starting the National Menopause Foundation, because let's face it, those of us that are menopausal or postmenopausal, we appreciate you and we appreciate the work that you do in two organizations, not just one, but two. She's definitely a woman who is inspiring nonconformity. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts at Femme Pharma for being part of the Love Me Avita podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Love Me Avita podcast. Love Me Avita means love my life, and that is a mantra we should all live by. please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out our website at fempharma.com. Remember to live well and love Mia Vita.